The Triangle's Morning News with Donna King.
Good morning. Joining us now, Rick Henderson from Carolina Journal. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Donna. How are you?
Doing well. So there was quite a bit of back and forth there yesterday at the North Carolina General Assembly. Sideshows, Maury Povich, lie detector tests. What is this?
This was the latest attempt by the minority leader in the House, Representative Darren Jackson of Wake County, to remind people about the veto override that took place September 11th in the House. He's now claiming that he was completely lied to by members of the leadership in the House who said that they had not concocted some kind of conspiracy to have this vote on a day when there weren't supposed to be any votes. And he basically said he's taken a lie detector test. He would pay for the members of the leadership who were there that day, who were making various statements about it, to take a lie detector test also. House Speaker Tim Moore happened to be in town and had his own news conference a little bit later, basically was the one who said, this isn't the Maury Povich show. Both their lawyers, they know that lie detector tests are not admissible in court. They're an interrogation effort, and this is basically a sideshow. And what I think the gist of it is that Representative Jackson previously has been somewhat conciliatory in his remarks, but it looks as if either his caucus has said something to him about you need to be more confrontational. It wouldn't surprise me if people inside the governor's office haven't said, look, you need to really let these guys have it because they performed a dirty deed on September 11th. And Speaker Moore says, look, I'm the Speaker of the House. I say when there are going to be votes or no votes. I never said this would be a no vote session. You guys need to show up. So it's something that's going to be an argument that will never be resolved completely, I think, until the session adjourns.
It seems like it. Now, I will say on September 12th, I was watching those live feeds, and that place was packed. No one was going to let this happen again. It is interesting. You know, they're showing up now.
Yeah, they are. And the big thing now, Representative Jackson talked about possible legal action. Now, we've been trying to figure out exactly what he could do. And one thing he conceivably could do is challenge what's called the veto garage. It was something that Tom Tillis started when he was Speaker of the House, in which he would say basically have a veto override vote and just leave it leave it around until he decided he had enough votes on the floor to make it happen. Now, Speaker Moore actually has had that veto override on the calendar for more than 2 months before he actually called it up. Jackson may say that this is somehow unconstitutional. As long as it's in the House rules, it should be constitutional. Now, if a Democratic dominated court decides that it wants to give a political victory to Democrats, then it might do that. But that would be seen as nothing more than just simply power politics, and probably set a very bad precedent in a lot of ways for the way that state government moves going forward.
Sure. And speaking of power politics, one of the things that Tim Moore brought up in that press conference I think was interesting. He said that Democrats who crossed the aisle voted for the budget were introduced to their primary opponent as a threat.
Right. Which sounds to me a little bit intimidating. And if indeed that took place, then that just simply shows how serious the governor is about making sure that this budget never passes. As long as the state Senate continues to hold firm in its partisan breakup and when it comes to voting on an override, then the veto is not going to be overridden. Of course, General Assembly still holds the ultimate trump card. I mean, it could pass a few more of these mini budgets. It could take care of a couple of other items of business and simply adjourn until next year. And so that way, the General Assembly still, in this state, the legislative branch has more power than any others. And it still holds the ultimate card, and then it just simply becomes a matter of whether politically this plays better for Democrats or Republicans.
And if you want to read more on that story, CarolinaJournal.com has the details there. But we were also talking about redistricting maps. What's the latest on that? I know the judges have said, well, they think it's still too gerrymandered.
Right. The thing that's going on right now is that the members of the House plaintiffs and defendants, they filed basically their briefs yesterday to the court, which said what their defense was of the way that they drew the maps. Members of the General Assembly said, look, it was an open process. It followed everything that you suggested that we do. And you should uphold the maps because They were voted on with bipartisan support, and we did what you said to do, and we think that these maps are fair. The next step is that we've got another week or so before all the materials have to be in, before any responses to those briefs come in. And then the court's going to start taking some time deliberating about whether or not it wants to have Nathaniel personally, the Stanford expert that it's hired to be its referee, to review the maps and potentially see if he thinks they're right or not. So we're still weeks away from another decision. The decision, where the calendar runs out on us is in December when candidate filing begins, and candidates need to know where they're going to be running if they want to run next year.
All right. We'll be watching that pretty closely. Of course, Rick Henderson, editor of the Carolina Journal. You can dig in to some of these stories on carolinajournal.com. Thanks so much, Rick. I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Don. I appreciate it.